96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Welcome to the inner city, inner city, inner city.
Ain't no love in the heart of the city. Ain't no love in the heart of town. Ain't no love in the show not for today. Ain't no love cause you ain't around. When you were mine, oh, I was feeling so good, cause you love lit up this whole neighborhood. But now that you're gone, you know the sun don't shine from the city hall to the county line. And that's why I said ain't no love in the heart of the city. Ain't no love in the heart of town. Ain't no love, and it sure is a pity. Ain't no love, cause you ain't around.
Good evening, Bahamas, and welcome to Guiding Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Valentino Braun, a.k.a. Scrooge Scoochie, Daddy or MP. It's a pleasure to be your host on this wonderful Friday evening. Our telephone numbers tonight on Guardian Radio are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259, and you can text us, powered by BTC, at 422-GR96. I'd like to say special thanks to my producer, Kermit. He does a fantastic job here on Guardian Radio with different appearance of excellent talk show hosts. That actually, it's quite fascinating, and it's good to listen. You know, I appreciate Juan McCartney. You know, he gets it personal, and he does a fantastic job. You know, Nahaja Blog does a wonderful job of getting MPs and persons who have big stories that come out over the week. She gets them to come on the show from time to time to talk about their situation, like how, like host speaker Haltrin Mutri, and et cetera, Reese Chipman, and et cetera, that she has on the show. And that's just be wonderful to hear them expressing their side of the story. Chicago Lang, you know, I listen to Chicago Lang, and sometimes you would say to yourself, you know, this guy, I believe he knows it all. But isn't the fact that he knows it all, it's the fact that he is telling you something about government that he experienced, and some things that we say about government might not be all that true, and some stuff he says can be true, you know, because he does a lot of explaining about the procedures about government. So it's very educational for us who are home and wants to learn about government. So with that guest lineup of different personalities, and if you sit down and you listen, you would get a educational lesson. And then we have my good friend. She does a wonderful job, Erin Green. She is doing a wonderful job. Listen to her, you know, when I'm doing some work at home. So I want to give a thumbs up to all of the talk show hosts, especially the producers who does a wonderful job on Guardian Radio for educating the general public. Yes. Okay, today's topic, we're going to talk a little bit of crime, a little bit of politics, and maybe you want to join in. But before we begin, I want to give out our community announcement. You know, we just had a recent spree of serious crime in the country, which Rich and I think has never slowed down. We talk about the Minister of National Security comment on, you know, crime is down, but he is insisting, you know, there's a lot more work to do, and there's a lot more work to do. We want to also discuss some of the police shooting, because as you listen to the story of those who were killed by police, now we're not saying the police wrong, but probably somewhere down the line we need to do some more training, because listen to the story from the family members who called the police on a young man who was just killed, who did not follow police orders, and he had the cutlass in his hand, and he was shot down and killed. Sometimes these people are mentally disturbed, and what we need to understand is sometimes we need to have police officers who are trained to make people stand down. If you watch in the United States of America and England, if there's a hostage situation or a person is behaving erratic and they know they are under medication, they always have an officer who comes. He takes command of the police over there. They pull back, and then he's a negotiator. He is the one who negotiates. His job is to try to de-escalate the situation before it becomes lethal in the country. And I think our police officers and our police force has not taken that approach, because there are many places in this country who are going through mental problems in this country. And listen to the story, you could see something was very wrong. Some of these people are very stressed out. You know, this 18 months of this COVID-19 has caused a lot of persons to lose their mind, their soul, because, you know, the struggle is so real and they have nowhere to turn. And then some people just trying to stay out of other people's way. And then, you know, us as behemoths, neighbors or persons living in the country, you know, some of us are troublesome. So sometimes we go and we push people's screen. And then, you know, people who have never been in problem, you know, and then we push their screens because of their stress, you know, they, you know, you don't mess with people who don't mess with nobody. You don't mess with quiet people, especially people who don't bother people. And then when you mess with them, they lose their temper. And in response, they become very aggressive. You know, so we have to be very careful. I get right back to this topic right after I talk about the community announcement. Because everything I do, I want the general public out there who is listening to this show, especially listening to me, and anyone who knows me in this country who listens to the show, my only desire in this country is to bring awareness and bring solutions for these same kind of incidents that happen in the country. I'm doing everything in my power to educate the powers to be and those who can assist. So let's put our attention on trying to bring the family value back in this country. Let's build up the family structure again in this country. Let's build and try to eliminate poverty, you know. The Bahamian people right now, all across the board, are very frustrated. We saw the vendors, you know, so, and you see how the lady talk on national TV. She is ready to go to war with menace. She don't care what the consequences is. If you're hearing that from a female, could you imagine the stress that is in our country right now, you know? So let me give it to community in Oxford, and then we get to these two particular shooting, and then from there we go to talk a little bit of politics, and we could go from there. Okay, I want to, and like I said, everything I do and everything that I'm involved with is to get to the younger kids, get to the kids, get to the tree before it bend. So I want to say thanks to Lanahan Bahamas, which was established to assist me in the community of Grunstein. Now it is a grown assisting me. It's a grown now to assist different communities. I want to give a special thanks to Lucas Metropolis, who was my partner. We got together to come up with a solution for the country's problem. The same problems we're talking about, violent crimes. We decided to say, hey, we need to educate. We need to provide opportunities. And Lucas Metropolis came to my aid on the advice of Ms. Alexander Millis, who was the former president of the Rand Flee Home. And from we started, it was me and Lucas. Then we got Pastor Ed Dorsett from East Creek Gospel Chapel to chip in. Then we got Sheila Pritchett. Then we got all type of persons from Iran, the Bahamas, Life of Key Foundations, persons who live with Life of Key, many persons who are behemoths who want to help the inner city community in the Bahamas at large. And there were many contributions. So I just want to say this. And this is the ideas we came up with to try and get rid of our crime problem in our community, in our country. Trying to put positive programs in place, provide the opportunity, provide the equipment, and give them the kids an opportunity to see the world and for them to have a better education, and also to try to reduce poverty and to teach them about business and work ethic, manners, and respect, and et cetera. Okay. At least 300 children in the over the hill and downtown communities are expected to benefit from Lenahan, Bahamas' recently revitalized literary program within the next year. This is expected to increase following a donation of $100,000 to the nonprofit organization from Kate and Justin Rose Foundation. I wanna commend the Kate and Justin Rose Foundation. They're a tennis golf star, and they've been supporting Lenahan, Bahamas for a few years now. So they put an additional $100,000 towards towards education. Lucas Metropolis, a board member of Lenahan, and this is how we do things. Lucas Metropolis is the creator of Lenahan, Bahamas. But he himself is a team player. We all drop our individual desires and say, hey, if we want this to be successful, maybe we have to have a joint effort where we are all a part of the board and we take advice from one another. And we come to the agreement, and now we have been successful in the last 3 years of running a great inner city program. And I give it one more year, and I think Lenahan, Bahamas would probably be one of the greatest outreach program in the entire Bahamas. So let me finish read. Lucas Metropolis, a board member of Lenahan, Bahamas. Lucas Metropolis is not a Bahamian. He visited the Bahamas for many years. He comes from South Florida. His heritage is Greek, but he resides in the United States of America, Florida. And we met about 10 years ago. And this is the success we have made in that time period to try and reduce crime, poverty, and educate in the Grandstand community. And like I said, it's outgrown its welcome. And now we have just recently purchased a property across the road from the previous center that was opened 2 years ago. And we got a property. Now we're looking to build a bigger and better community center. In fact, it's going to be a state of the art community center in the Lewis Creek Grandstand area. And in fact, another community announcement, the Lewis Creek corner is getting revitalized. I'm working with a husband and wife team who has been supporting me for the last 8 months. And what we're doing, if you pass through Lewis Creek, we're removing all the old cars. We're checking out the abandoned houses, putting windows and doors on them. We're looking at all the old yards that can be turned into something wonderful. We're putting up fence. Right now, we're doing some work on my friend Guppy Yard. He has a lot of cars next to Lenahan, Bahamas. So he himself has committed himself to be a part of the program. Now we just purchased a fence. So we're putting up a fence so that, you know, we can beautify the area. The remaining cars, we are moving now. So we're putting up a fence so that it would look beautiful and nice. And the whole corner will be universal. Come from one end of Lewis Street, from East Street to Market Street. So that's our place of work, and we are making great, great progress. Lewis Street is going to be transformed into an empowerment zone where we have tourists visiting our community. So let me finish reading. Which Lucas Metropolis, a board member of Lenahan, said, with those funds, we will build a reading room in our second community center coming soon. The room will be named after Kate and Justin Rose, and yes, it should. And he support a literacy program featuring both online learning and direct support from our reading instruction. The goal is to bluster lessons learned in school and help those kids failing through the cracks to make sure we can enhance literacy rates. An assessment last year by Lenahan, Bahamas on youth in its program revealed less than 30% of children that should be reading at the first and fifth grade reading levels can be in fact read significantly. Kate Rose said the U.S.-based Kate and Justin Rose Foundation hopes that by providing a library, more children will be able to lose themselves in the pleasure of quiet reading time or an exciting book. This is great news for us because we need to learn our history. And this is the stuff we're rebuilding libraries. You know, see, this is what we're going to have to do to change the mindset and get ahead of this problem that we're facing in the country. So I want to thank Lenan Bahamas. I want to thank the Gulf Stars for such generosity, Kate and Justin, and to their foundation for being a brother, big brother and sister to many kids in the Grandson community and the Bahamas at large. I want to say a very, very thank you for the wonderful donation. And this is not the first time they donated. They donated around the hurricane. I think they donated for the relief effort, $100,000 to a Lenahan feeding program that were feeding hundreds of people across Nassau. I just said he's a wonderful person. That's how you make change in the country. Thank you. Okay. I got a message here. Say, hi, Bron. I'm Simonette. And if you're led, you can reach me. Okay. Okay. I got the message. He says if I could reach out to Brother Adrian Francis. Francis, okay, I will get to you after the show. Thank you very much. Okay, yes. Earlier on the show, I was talking about crime. Let me start off with the Minister of National Security. The Honorable Minister of National Security, Marvin Dames, he was given a statement, I think it was this week, where he reiterated the fact that crime is down in the country. And then they did the statistics from this year around with the murder statistics and crime statistics, and they analyzed it, and they're saying it's down. And, you know, and the minister did say that, you know, we can't be satisfied with that. We have to, you know, seeing how we can get better and dealing with violent crimes in the country and crime on the whole. You know, the statistics might show from this time last year that crime is done. Now, crime you're referring to, you might be referring to house breaking, car theft, etc. But there has been an increase in armed robbery. There has been an increase, I wouldn't say in murders, but there has been a lot of murders recently. And we have to take a look at that because I don't care how crime is done. As long as we're having these serious type of murders in our country, crime can never be done. The number one crime in the country, if I'm going to say it, is murder. The number two worst crime in the country is attempted murder. Number three worst crime in the country, to me, is rape. And I'd go with this as number one. Alongside murder, it's abuse. Sexual abuse against kids goes along the side of murder, in my book. And yes, one murder is too many in this country. And I know the minister's speaking to give credit to his political party, but at this moment, he's saying that the Bahamas is safe. I don't think we are safe at all because everyone who walk in the inner city community, if a car speeds too fast, some people are jumping over the wall. You know, if gunshots are heard, everyone flies inside. And if someone wants to get you and really wants to get you in this country right now, they can get you because it seems guys are determined and they are very, very serious. So the minister is saying that crime is done. But as we can see, you know, a lot of people are fearing for their life. And if you look at these crimes, okay, I want to comment on those two shootings, I talked about many persons can be going to a mental state. Many people are stressed out. So let's talk about the police shooting. I'm not saying the police are wrong. I'm not saying they're right. Probably they're right and they're wrong because it just doesn't seem right with the last two police shooting. I'm talking about the one with the cutlass, and I'm talking about the one where a gentleman in his yard, it was reported first that it was an abandoned house, but comes to find out that's where the gentleman lived, and he was killed in his yard. And I think his adrenaline was going. And according to some reports, there was a report went to police headquarters stating that a woman was being assaulted, an elderly lady was being assaulted. There was a scruffle for some young gentleman who tried to assist the lady. I think she fell down and the gentleman ran. And the guy seemed chased after him. And I don't know if he had a licensed shotgun or illegal shotgun, but he was a homeowner. And he opened fire at the guys, them probably chasing after him. And he hit one of the guys and they scattered. The police responded. Gentleman ran in his yard. The police gave chase. I don't know if the police tried to talk him down, but we must understand. We don't know what happened before that. We don't know if anyone bothered with the gentleman or not giving him the right. We don't know what was going on in his life. We don't know if his wife left him. We don't know if someone died in his family. We don't know none of this stuff. Probably he had no one left in the world right then and there. He was thinking about committing suicide. Things are so tough. You know, and like I said, I'm not pointing the finger at nobody. I'm just trying to understand the situation and see if it make any sense to the listening audience, because there are a lot of people in this country going through mental crisis in the country, okay? And that's because of stress. And, you know, like I said, I don't know if the police tried to talk him down, you know, if the gentleman, blood is rushing, he get chased from a group of guys. Now he's cornered. He's in his yard. His only instinct is to protect himself. The police coming after him. He's paranoid. Police might have tell him, "Police, don't move." That's all they probably would have said. They wouldn't say, "Stop for a minute." And say, you know, if they're not in harm's way, if they could see the gentleman behind a building or behind a patrol car, they know he is pinned down. They know he has nowhere to go. They got the place surrounded. Did they call in a specialist to try and see if they could talk down the gentleman, try to reach one of his sisters or cousin? Maybe they could come alongside the negotiating police and they could try and talk him down to put down the firearm. If we ain't doing those kind of stuff, then we're going to have a lot more people getting killed. And I didn't hear nothing bad about these two gentlemen who got killed. Like, they were criminals. So it has to be, they probably were law-abiding citizens, but there's something went terribly, terribly wrong, and they acted that way. And then, become it, on our end, it was the community trying to get him. Then the police came after. So he was scared at first. He fired. His blood, his adrenaline is going. He's cornered in his yard. The police surrounding his yard. He's looking right. He's looking left, you know. So he decides to fire a shot. And then the police them just lame of it. And then he is a dead soul. And then when you listen to the story, you listen to his family members, there's the one who come on national radio and TV and told the general public that that was not an abandoned house. That was a house that he resided in. Okay? So that give questions. You should ask some questions there, because if that was his home, then, like I said, the police them cut off, waited outside. They got him. They know he can't get nowhere. They have high-powered weapons. They could have at least, or it happened too fast, but you have to be trained for these type of responses. You know, and I think we need to start adding that to our Royal Bahamas Police Force, okay? Because he broke the law. He shot at the police. But at the same time, we need to look at the beginning of the story before it gets to him shooting at the police and getting shot from the police. No, we never tell that story. We only tell the part that he's just shooting the gun and the police kill him. And that's the end of the story. But we ain't looking at how he was feeling as a citizen, what was going on in his mind, you know. We need to have police negotiators. And then I want to talk about the next murder. And I'm going to say again, it could be justifiable. It could be not justifiable. It could be a two. It could be justifiable and not justifiable, because at the end of the day, like I said, if the police were trained to negotiate and talk down people, like in the United States, America, and England, and in Russia, when they have guys who have AK-47 and bombs on, scrap to themselves, and they have police negotiated who come, they have armed police who is marksmen, they're standing all around the perimeter, and they themselves would call a negotiator, because at the end of the day, they might get saved. That same person who has the gun in his hand, you know, they talk him down to make him drop that firearm. They would call his family members, wife, his son or daughter, and they would let him talk to him. And the person gives up peacefully, you know. And I want to talk about the shooting where the guy, I think, charged at the police with a cutlass. His family member stated that he was acting disarranged, like talking to himself, walking around the streets. So you know it has to be something that going on in this man's head for him to be disarranged. You know that poisonous right now, who I'm talking to, want to commit suicide, wants to get out of this world because they can't deal with this everyday struggle. It's too much. Their light is off. They hustling. You know, and it seems like nothing is working for them. And then we look at how the country is governed, you know, with this lockdown. And there's no incentive for Bahamians. And there's really no one to turn to because most Bahamians are poor. So I really can't go to my auntie or my cousin because they are doing really, really struggling themselves. So there's nowhere to turn. So people get and fall in their mental states and they block out everyone. They block out their sister. They block out their mom. Sometimes people can't even, their mom and sisters can't talk to them. But it's still a way to try, you know, to reach out to them. So here we have now, they call the police and their family members are acting erratic. The police pull up on the scene. You know, he sees the guy with the cutlass in his hand. He says, this is the police. I don't know how he says the police. When people in state of mind, they don't care if he's the police. They don't care. They're not thinking straight. They don't care who you are. Okay, the only thing you can do to this person sometimes is just talk. Stay your distance and talk and have a conversation. And you might hit a nerve and they might say something. But anyway, let me get to the story. And that's how I analyze it. I'm not saying I'm right, but that's how I analyze it. He has a cutlass. He sees the police. The police sees him. He's injecting for the police. He is walking around trying to move away from the police. So the police is lining him up, has his service revolver in his hand, and he's telling them to drop the cutlass and get on the ground. Now, you're talking to a man who you don't know nothing about. You don't know what happened to him. Like I said, you don't know. His mom could have died. His dad could have died. His child could have died. He could have been getting put out of his house. His wife could have leave him. He could have get fired from his work. He could have bills piled up on him. And I said, the whole world turning against him. So you never know. You never know. So now here you have it. You're supposed to be protecting yourself. Like I said, I'm not being disrespectful to the police. I'm only using a scenario and to try and find a solution, what we need to do to try and see if we can be a more transparent, have things in place for certain, when certain things happen, you got to prepare yourself, okay? Like negotiating for a fuck. Okay, so here you have it now. He doesn't reply to the police officers. You know, he looks at them. He heads towards them. The police probably box up, fire one and shot in there. Bam! So if the police fires a one and shot in there, and the person who has the cutlass does not stop, right? Now, this gives the police one option. He can say if he has the right equipment, if his next partner has a taser, his partner could try and see if he could use a taser, right? In one case.
and he has the gun on him. So if he make any attempt to try and harm the police partner, then we have an alternative. Now, we might not have to kill him. We could say this man is deranged. You try shooting with the taser, okay? Keep a distance. If he make a move towards you, I would aim for his leg, and I would shoot him in his leg. I would stop him from being mobile. Or I'd aim for his shoulder, just to say we're taking him down instead of firing 5 or 6 shots in him. You know, that to me is overkill. And I heard the commissioner of police say that officers trained to kill. If that is the case, right? If someone has a mental case and they silence patients, and then you as a trained officer is trained to kill, then you're not qualified for the job. I'm going to say this now. You are not qualified for the job. Okay? Let me give you a good example again with our Royal Bahamas Police Force. When persons get shot, you know that the police in Canada and the U.S. and et cetera, they have training in how to save lives, even when they shoot somebody. And they wait on the ambulance to come. Do you know that? Our police, on the other hand, would shoot you, stand up in the road, over you, and watch you bleed out. This is our training. All it needs is to get you out of the book right now. Because looking at these last police shooting, I'm not saying these are justifiable, okay? I'm not saying that the officers are wrong. I'm saying probably the whole component of it is wrong in my eyes when you analyze it. We need to have more training for our officers. They just can't be trained to be a marksman. And anyone who confronts them, they're going to kill. Earlier, in the early 70s and 80s, when someone had a cutlass in their hands, many officers would shoot them in their leg. But because of the outbreaks of violent crimes in the country, the police start to just train for headshots and the heart. And the reason for that is because where we have left so many thousands of Bahamians, right, to become men at an early age, and they're not men, they're still teenagers. You could be 50 and you're not a man if you're not thinking like a man, okay? And they make these bad decisions. So if you have in a country where murders are frequent, people are attacking the police with cutlass, you know? People are shooting at the police. What do you think the police response is going to be for us as a citizen, even though you're innocent? The police has to say, well, we have a lot of violent criminals out there. It's better to protect yourself, right? So sometimes these police be over-aggressive because you can imagine being a police officer, you're sitting in the car. And as you and your friend sitting on your hand, someone just can shoot you, Hay Street, right? Next 20, 30 minutes, someone just get robbed. Next couple of minutes, next hour, someone just get killed on this way. So if you're on duty and you are a senior officer, you're telling your officers, you know, be vigilant, okay? Protect yourself, get home to your family, okay? So the officers are done. Motivated because they know they are dealing with a lot of serious crimes in the country. So, who is going to win this? Because if you look at it, we had police shooting. We had guys who committing criminal offenses shooting, killing innocent people, and killing their rivalry. So, who is winning this? Police killing on one end, the guys in the street killing one end, the politician and the host of assembly. They cursing, carrying on like this is a game for us. This is a game for the young man who got shot down with a cutlass in his hand. This is a game for the innocent persons getting shot on the streets. This is a game people sleeping in their car. This is a game for you guys to be procrastinating the host assembly when we get all these serious issues in our country today. this is a game. This is no game. You know, people's lives at stake, you know. You know how much new laws they get for us now with this COVID-19? The police have so many reasons to pull you over right now for not wearing a mask, you know. You know, so many new laws have come in place now. So your freedom is practically gone, you know, because you got, you know, the police can pull you over on actually 6 feet, even if you don't have a mask on and you're in public or, you know, why might I say public? Can I ask somebody something? Okay. Do you think it's right for me to have on a mask, right? When I'm by myself, just say I'm walking in the streets, I'm going down Bay Street. There's no one walking on the side of me, right? I'm going down Bay Street. I'm not on Bay Street as yet. I'm away from crowd. So I'm walking to get the beach. I'm going over Market Street. So it's hot. You know, the mask suffocates some people of short breath. And then sometimes the sun is be hot. So even if you have a healthy body, you need to get the mask off. Once you're not around nobody. So you get the mask off. And there's no one around you. There's no 6 feet. You can see poisons are coming to you. So when the poison is reaching close to you, take your mask and you put it back on them. When the poison passes, you take the mask back off. Now, when you're downtown, you keep the mask on 24/7. But after you get over Bay Street, you can take the mask off because a lot of people, to tell you the truth, it's be hot. So the police that see poisons, like walking by themselves, you know, with their mask off, by themselves. No one's on the road. And they're pulling them over and giving people citation. And then if some people argue, they're getting locked up. All these new laws, all these new fines. You know, there's too much burden on us as citizens. You know, and everything is just fine. And coming out into being people, not as law. Man, there's too much laws now for us, man. It's like everything our forefathers worked for. Fighting, Pompey, Sir Randall, Sir Lyndon. Everything. Marlow Butler. It seems like everything we fight for, in this day and age, seems like everything is getting taken away and things are getting worse. You know? That's how serious it is, you know? I feel it. I feel it for the guy, you know, with the cutlass, and I feel it for the guy, even though he got killed with the shooting at the police. I could imagine what they were going through. You know, for them to shoot at the police and for them to attack the police. And these could have been poisons who have never been in a problem before. That's what we need to look at. Why? Why would someone who never been in a problem before see the police officer and charge at the police officer? That's because some people is want to get out of this world, but they don't want to commit suicide. Some have the nerve to commit suicide, and then some are just fed up and they want someone to kill them. And there are many people who are miserable in this community today. And many people can attest to this. There are poisons who live in your community and they would bother with everybody. All right? And everyone is saying he wants someone to kill them. That's how miserable some people is living in this community. So we as people got to be very, very careful. Okay? I just recently had one of my cousins, Lamont Penn, he just recently got killed last week, Friday, after he came off the show. And I was going to stop to the nightclub just to stop and say hello to everyone, you know. And my instinct says, Scoochie, Scrooge, go straight on. And I passed from Martin Street. And I like to say this to many young poisons out there and poisons who own these bar rooms and clubs. Club owners, stop letting a bunch of young guys in groups of 10 and 5s come to the nightclub. Okay? If you know a guy come in your place and cause problem one time, you need to ban him. Okay? You need to ban him out your bar. You need to put cameras in your club. You need to put buses on your club. You need to have security in your club. Okay? You gotta step up your security. Okay? You can't have poisons who causing problems in the streets, and you know them, to come in your nightclub because they are a danger to everyone. And I advise anybody in any club, if you see a young gentleman who you know is being involved with gang activity, I advise you to park up and go home. Okay? Any nightclub you go to, and you see someone, you know, gang affiliated or a person of interest from other guys, park up and go. And here's the next thing. You need to stop arguing with people, okay? Especially when you go to these nightclubs. Rum and argument don't go good together, okay? You ain't gonna never win that, okay? Well. Okay, so I just want to say that, you know, bars are so dangerous now. You know why bars are so dangerous now? Bars are so dangerous now, you're dealing with a young generation. I don't think the prime minister of the country or the opposition leader of this country understand the situation they are trying to, you know, Brave Davis is trying to be the next prime minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Dr. Human Minister is trying to repeat as the prime minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas. Okay, both Brave Davis and the prime minister both serve on governing party. They serve in the government, then their party was government. Okay, so to me, if they're not looking at all these problems we have, hey, don't worry for the leadership or the wife to be prime minister if you're not going to be able to come up with great solutions and great programs to all these problems we have in the country. Because I'm going to say this again. There are a lot of people out there disgruntled with the Free National Movement government, right? But watching and hearing the words come out of Parliament the last few days from the opposition, it seems to me that they themselves are not learning a lesson. And the lesson is, hey, in this day and age, with all the suffering, with all this killing, with all these people sleeping in the car, okay? This is time to say, hey, this ain't about party. We need to look at all these situations and we have to make a difference in the lives of the Bahamian people who reside in this country. Because some of these things that we are going through in this country today can be avoided. Okay? I lived in a wilderness community in the Grandstand community for many years, from when I was a little boy. In my days, I know the bad set of bad boys came out of Grandstand. I'm talking about Lelongs. Lelongs is the number one bad boy in Nassau, New Providence, and he got killed from the police on Wolf Road. And he got, must be about 100 shots, okay? We had Rasta Bike. We had so many, we had the first armed robbers in our community, and et cetera. So, what I'm trying to say, I came up growing, seeing these guys. Then I myself became a gang leader. Okay, and I'm not saying this to use this and say, talking about gangs. I'm just saying that I myself and my peers, we got ourselves involved with gangs. And when we were growing up in the Grandstand community, that community was a corrupt community. We had rapes, we had armed robberies, we had abuse, we had murders, we had drug dealing, we had the church was missing. We had so many disadvantages in our community, and that produced a generation of wipers. And I was a part of that. And I was one of the worst and toughest gangsters in the country. You know, I was one of the top around Nassau. Okay? And when I switch around my life, I say, wow, how can I make a difference in this community? When you look around now, the guys who you train, see, me, I train hundreds of young guys to be bad. Okay? That's what I was taught. So I taught them how to be tough and how to be rough. Teach them how to use gun, how to use knife, how to set up to sneak somebody, you know, how to get somebody, you know? And I teach hundreds of guys that. right? Many of them got killed and still in the news today, okay? And I say, how can I make a difference in my community when I want to change my life around? Because I really didn't want to make a difference. I got tired of the life. And I made it through after being shot at over 22 times from, or 24 times from 24 different gangsters in the country, along with the police. And my life was a living hell. And I dedicated myself to making change when I look and see all the guys I train, and the guys who other guys train, like Samuel Musha McKinney train, you know, Chucky train, and all us who were leaders, we trained a specific group of guys. So we were the ones who brought the second and third and fourth generation of criminals in the country. You know, so when you watch the news, I say, man, wow, that's the little guy I teach. You know, and if it wasn't us who teach him, it's our children, you know, who were part of the gang now. So I started to come up with comprehensive ways on how we can reduce the poverty and crime in our community. And I started the work over 20 years ago. And in the Grandson community that I reside in, we were having shootings every day for years. It was one of the worst community in Nassau, New Providence, and this whole country knows it. We is the only area in the whole Commonwealth of the Bahamas that I tell you we had no car movements for about 3 weeks in the Grandstand area of Lewis Street, H Street, and Taylor Street. We had police cars on every corner for about 3 weeks just to stop cars from riding through the area, because the guys in the area caused so many pain and destruction that everyone wanted to kill somebody who lived in Lewis Street, H Street, and Taylor Street. You could have just been coming out your house and you would have got shoot. You could have been an innocent person and you would have got shoot. And keep on working and keep on working. And this was one of the most violent and most dangerous community in Nassau, in the history of Nassau, New Providence. Just three corners, you know. Lewis Street, Hayes Street, and Taylor Street. And then the side corners. So I changed around my life. Now my biggest problem is now, the guys who I train, they're the gang leaders now. And I'm trying to get out. So how am I going to go to them and I'm going to talk to them and tell them, hey man, boy, it's time for me to go. You know what I did? I showed them. By staying positive. And you know something? That started to reach them. There are many gang leaders right now who are chilling out now. They decided to live the gang life and chill out. That is in response of me talking to them and doing positive programs. And then when I'm talking to them, they know where I came from. So when I'm talking to them, I'm talking with authority. And now we have reduced our criminal elements in our community. So if we keep on building up our community, you know, with the donation from Lenahan Bahamas, from the Ten of Stars and Lenahan Bahamas, we can make a serious dent in our crime problem in the country. And we need to really take a look on how our policing system going on, because them last two shootings, you know, they look sketchy. I think they could have been avoided. I think that we need to have negotiating police in place, because like I said, there are many people who have mental issues in this country. And many people are stressed out, and they won't have no better time. You know, I would tell them, go pray to God. But hard times, some people forget about God. It's so fortunate. You know? So, I just wanted to say that. Now, if you want to comment on this topic here, said I was going to talk about the politicians. That's the caller. I'm going to take this call and then I'm going to talk about the politics part. Go ahead, caller. You're on Inside the Inner City.
Hello, good day, Scrooge. How you doing?
I'm fine.
All right, it's the blind one, Papa.
Man, you're always doing good stuff, man. Go ahead.
Good afternoon to your listeners. Good evening to your listeners all over the world. Happy Father's Day, Mr. Father Scrooge.
Thank you very much, man. Thank you very much. You really, really could use it right now. But go ahead, the blind one. I say thank you very much.
Good, you've been out. I mean, you sound like you work hard today.
Yeah, man, I work hard today, man. We didn't clean up the neighborhood.
Listen, so I want to ask you a couple of questions, but because I don't write them down. You just watched that thing that's come on cable on channel 465. They call it Eye on TV or something, Chicago PD.
Yes.
You just watch Officer Sergeant Ball.
Yes.
Boy, he's killing somebody. Ah, man, don't play with crime. What do you think of any of that? That's just a movie, but boy, I believe some of them think the same way. I don't know if we need people like that in the real world, or if he's just acting with some of them real officers doing for real, or some parts of the world with criminality. And people, you know, who mind set on just being that way.
Yes.
So you say you just watch it?
Yes, I just watch it.
Okay, okay, okay. Yeah, I listen to it a lot, too. I want to say something about the last two shootings. Generally speaking, wish I could say Father's Day and everything. Tell me something, though, Scrooge.
Go ahead.
Scrooge, what you think, what is your view, or what idea you will give to any government, especially here in the Bahamas, with this, what suggestion you could give to us to discourage us from carrying arms like guns and stuff, or you know, just carrying arms? But I know it's a reason why they carry it, because vigilante, just so they're trying to protect themselves and all this reason. But this word, what they get, they call it deterrent. They say it discourage you, like if you give stiffer penalties, or if you tell them, you know, some people say 5 years for one bullet, no bail for a gun. What's good? What you think?
Sir, buying one, you could give niggas 50 years for a gun. I ain't gonna change the fuck. Hey, you could put stiffer penalties and whatever penalty you could put on the book. That is not going to change the one mindset if they're living in a community where they're being abused, where it's poverty, and where they're struggling every day. People, you bark against the wall. I don't care what the consequences is. They're going to make mistakes. I don't care what you do. I don't care what penalty you give to them or whatever. It's not 5 years for gun. You could get them 50 years for gun. I can remember they used to give you three months for gun, and then they go on to 6 months, then they go on to 2 years. That didn't stop nobody.
So it's still to 2 years?
Yeah.
It's still to 2 years now?
Let's get 2 to 4. I think there's year 2 to 4 now.
For 4 years if you get catch with a gun.
Yeah. And they
no
stick.
Extra for bullets or nothing?
Yeah, they just give you extra for bullets. But in some cases, you could see when the judge talks about it, sometimes they take away the bullets. Some kind of arrangement is being made, you know, and et cetera. And sometimes these guys who get catch with guns, they give the police other guns. So when you hear the police say sometimes they find a gun in a barn in the building and there's no one lock up, that's be the same person who they apprehend with a firearm in order for him to get a lighter sentence or some type of probation. They normally go and tell the police, okay, I have an next one or two guns.
That plea agreement thing when they implemented a few years ago.
Yes, and I give me one or two guns, and then the police would let you go. People don't know this. This is what goes on right now. Anyone can tell you this. There are many persons who get catch with a gun right now, like how you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And when their back is against the wall, they have the gun, they're locked up, they're ready to get catch with a gun, and the officer will come to them and say, excuse me, do something for me, and I go, work it out for you. And then the guy say, what you want? And he said, well, I have two guns. And he said, let's make a deal. If you give me them two guns, I can see if I can talk to my boss and get you a reduced sentence. You know, I take the bullets off, et cetera. And then the guy would say, let me make a call. Let me call my friend and tell him to put it in the old car or et cetera. So when you be seeing these stuff where they find guns in an abandoned building and they don't arrest nobody, that's be the guys who get catch in custody.
So I think that's still better than nothing. Not getting them guns off the road. I think that's still good.
Yeah.
It's a reason why the people believe they have the arm. They say, fine, man. And
what you mean?
You see what's going on in the country?
You think
you'll be overdoing it? Like, when you talk about these young people who I always think why they carry on that, but some people mind just say, you don't consider them as young punks, eh?
Listen,
instead of pick up guns and just,
listen,
you know, they ain't listening to nobody. No respect for older people in these
No,
terms.
Because, a lot of them don't have no respect. They only have respect for certain people in the community, all right? Every bad boy has respect for somebody. Then you have some who just don't care. They're just ruthless, okay?
And I'm scared of them, sir. When I say scared, I'm scared enough that I won't believe. I'd prefer to take them out of their miseries than for them to have society scared of them when they don't respect life.
Yes. And that's what happened, and that's why you're seeing so much retaliation, because if you live in a community, you know a guy is troublesome, and I'm not troublesome, but he bothers everyone. You know he shoot somebody the other day, he might have killed someone a year ago. So what you think I'm going to do as a citizen? I'm gonna prepare myself, I'm going to work, and I'm going to take $1,500, I'm going to buy a gun, and just have that gun for this particular young gentleman in case he comes my way or harms my family. This is my only alternative, because if you look at the community them don't have no one you can go to. You understand?
I feel like if we tell young people, not people in general, if we tell them that no bail for gun, and all of this. You say that wouldn't stop it, but I believe we wouldn't have to worry. But that particular one, see, that one might change their life around. You know, I always go on to ask you, you say you change. I know you changed, Scrooge. Not to say you say you. I know. We know. The Bahamas know you changed. Did Jesus play a role in this? I always hear you talk about things, but I just didn't catch the part where you say how much you had to cry out to the Lord, really, to. Because I believe this is be a personal thing when you make that change. Like, I believe that would be the first step to touch base with Jesus.
And yes.
Unless you have a different name for that person who, I mean, that inner being who you stand with.
Papa, the blind one.
Yes, sir.
No pastor helped me out, okay? Here's the thing. I saw God for myself because I'm not supposed to be here. I know within myself, no one can tell me this. The more times I've been being get shot at, all right? And I'm not going to say this again. I've been getting shot at over 23, 24 times. I got shot once with a shotgun. I have pellets in my back now where I got to go in surgery, but I got 20
Thank
years
God
ago.
You didn't get them in your eyes. The pellets gone in my eyes. That's why the damage in my eyes today and I'm blind.
Yes, I remember you. I've got shot at with 357, what? 9 millimeter, 245, 38. 25, 12 gauge, Uzi from police. Okay.
You can shoot with these things?
They shoot at me.
Okay.
People, different guys. I can name all the guys. Marvin Bodie, he's living. He was the boss of Mason. He still is the boss of Mason. He's living. Kelsey Lundy, a.k.a. Scrooge, down East Street. Arlington Butler is now deceased. We have James shoot at me. Miller, who is in prison now, spending life in prison. My cousin Tyan took a 38 from my cousin Julian and pressure treat.
Your two cousins shoot at you. So listen, so Scrooge, you don't think there's nothing we could do to discourage them from this way right now? They're from popping their necks.
We
done convict them in court, pop their necks. You don't think it's not? Because I believe it's bigger than us just getting rid of these set who seems to be like they don't respect themselves or respect life. I think it's a problem. Maybe if we could catch them in time.
Yes.
We could try to see because you was fortunate. I was fortunate. You understand? We see a better way. We realize it's a better way. Some of them, I consider some of them lost. I ain't talking about the set who you can't do nothing with.
Yes, and you know why those that are lost? They're the set who went to prison. Who have been in and out of prison, like the Simon Muji McKenzie, the Stephen Dye Stubbs, and et cetera, who come with the prison, and they're unsensitized, excuse me for calling their names, and they're to and fro from the inner city community and then prison, back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
Eh?
Mm-hmm.
If we want to do anything in this country, we have to provide the best opportunities and build a village back again. Then we have to go to...
You talked to Paul Thompson before. I think he was assistant commissioner.
Yes, Paul Thompson used to stay right through our corner.
Yeah? Yes. But listen... I don't know if you ever hear him on the radio. He sounded like he said over the years, the police don't train, getting to the two last shootings, sorry. The police don't train to shoot no one in their leg or their hand.
They used
to. They shoot to eliminate the threat.
Yes, they used to. They used to.
They used to?
They
shoot
used
the
to.
Leg,
yeah, huh? They used to shoot you back in our days in the gang days and stuff like that, early 80s and 90s. Police would just shoot you if you had a cut in your hand. Just shoot
you. I guess it depends how threatened they feel or how much their training is coming over what they've been trained. I think they shoot Santa Marcy.
Mm-hmm. They train for that. They used to nip you or shoot you through your tie or shoot you in your leg. Yes. Because they're marksmen. It depends on the situation. Now,
I don't know if you ever, as a child, thought like, to be a police officer, let's skip that. The point is that, do you think when police officers give commands for us to put down our weapons, our rock, our whatsoever, do you think if we don't listen and we continue to do what we're doing in the police, let's say they claim that their life is unfair, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they shoot the person, do you think they went about it the wrong way?
No, they didn't went about it the wrong way, but you need to understand this too. If an armed person is standing in front of you, he's the police, okay? You're seeing him there. Something has to be totally wrong with the person who's charging at the police.
Yes.
Something has to be wrong.
Yeah, but the police won't go home to his family.
So you see? So
where's the gun? Let the man with the cutlass kill. Like, he has the gun.
So you see?
The police get the gun, not the one with the cutlass. So the one with the cutlass should listen. Scrooge, you know what I'm thinking, too?
Unless the person is going through something very emotional.
You know what I think the solution is? I could be wrong, but this is what I was leaning on for many years, and I hear some people lean on. I think these men mental problems sometimes, or even the said what we ain't know to say, well, that person might be crazy or something, or we might call them, but they just tripled or they just lawless.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a spiritual battle. Oh. I think the only solution, and to start off with, they have to rebuke them spirit in Jesus' name. But they all over them. I don't know if everyone on a death sentence would do that. When you commanded by the police to drop your weapon, or you shoot at the police for whatever, if you want to die. But I mean, if you really want to live.
Hmm. Some people, right there in the moment, I'm actually shutting up the blind one. You ever got mad? I mean, mad.
Angry.
And what happened when you get mad?
I,
you would say some things and do some things, right?
Yes.
But you can't remember you did, right?
Yes.
Because it's the heat of the moment, right?
Yes.
Okay, my point exactly. So that's something when the devil takes over us, and many of us don't have no anger management programs.
I know I shot a patient, but mm-hmm. brother, I practice patient. Patient is the key. You mm-hmm. have to practice it.
Yes.
You have to practice patient.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You might get angry. I learned over the years, so many things I would like to do and so many people I would like to deal with, right? Sometimes mm-hmm. the way us humans carry on with one another, right? Not just how it might have been approached to me, but I mean how I see people be taken advantage.
Yeah.
But I realized over the years, I turned 50 the other day in November. That's a true thing with God, is we say vengeance is his own, let him deal with it. Because we can do it dumbly, we can do it stupidly. That's the devil is be telling us, we got to kill these people, we don't play.
Yes.
We got to rebuke that spirit. We got to drop that catastrophic belief they drop. We got to know, although some of them police officers, they punks too.
Yeah.
Some of them go about it the wrong way, they only doing it for the money.
Yeah.
They don't have no respect for no one, some of them.
Yeah.
But we got to rebuke that stubbornness. The angriness,
yes.
That we got to get even. We got to show them we don't play. We rebuke it in Jesus' name.
Yes.
And let Jesus deal with them. He mightn't deal with it right away, but he can deal with it. So sometimes people be doing things to people, hurt your family. They walking around. They can't all like their head twist on. Like they bad. Trust me, my Lord.
Mm.
If you only let God deal with these things, then I learn this every day. Yes, I just get angry. Yes, I still like to. You understand?
Yes.
But what I learned over the years, you have to allow the Lord to come in. I mean, for us who believe in it, to deal with it. But this spirit over us and these, not just the young people, us generally.
Everybody, everyone in this country. Everyone in the country.
Get angry, mother skin. They going about it the wrong way, bringing up these monsters, bringing up, I mean, in no respect, letting their daughters, I mean, thinking
yes.
it's all about money.
Yes.
Or
yes.
How rich the guy is.
Yeah.
You understand? All kind of foolishness.
Papa, let me say this. Let me give you a good example. I'm not saying nothing bad about the young lady. Did you see the young lady who did the interview over at Lannis? Did you listen to her words closely?
You mean from off the beach?
Yeah. Did you listen to her words?
Some, yes.
Now, that is a female. She could be a mother. She's angry. You heard her words? You hear?
Yes.
You did? When you listen to her, what would you say? She shouldn't have said that, right? What's your response on that?
Only if we could feel one another pain, then for every action is a reaction. See, I learn over the years. Maybe some other people will say, oh, she shouldn't say no, this or that, right? I learn over the years, right? For every action is a reaction.
Mm-hmm. So what is
maybe
a reaction?
We need to be more considerate, and especially us who are in authority, you know?
Why would she
speak? You know, you have to deal with it. So I don't knock people for speaking their mind.
Okay.
Sometimes we speak it in a different way. We bring it across in a different way. And when that passion and that anger and that pain
mm-hmm,
inside
mm-hmm.
you, that's what you get.
So when you see that, right? Just mm-hmm. look at it as the fact that's a female, and she's a decent human being. But she reached her boiling point. She is saying, "This is the government of the Bahamas. I used to be him, man." Now, all of a sudden, I come on the beach, where it's make my honest living, COVID-19, and get me locked on things, done stuff. I get all type of bills. Eh? I get all kind of things. They ain't working out for me. Now, I come here now, and all my stuff off the beach. The lady say she ready to go out of it, medicine. She don't care. What? Okay?
That's why I tell you, you have to let God deal with the things, then. Because if we deal with it, we might be right what we saying, and it might be unfair how they treating us or how someone is dealing with us.
Mm-hmm.
But you really have to just tell that spirit right there, look, yeah, chill out, yeah? The way are you telling me to do this, I can get in trouble. Does he make no sense? I love myself too much for this.
Yes.
I'm responsible for me. I'm not going to do that dumb thing.
Wow.
Let me trust in God. Listen, I want it all. It's not like the music coming on.
How you get your last question, though? Go ahead.
I want to say happy Father's Day to all the fathers them all over the Bahamas, especially the fathers in jail, all the stepdaddies, all the fathers them in the old folks' home and stuff like that. Even the people who they call the fathers, who they call deadbeat fathers, because when mothers, they come, we don't worry about the mothers them who grow and their daughters up to be this and that, you know. We celebrate all of them, so we can celebrate all the fathers them, you know. And my daddy over there in Freeport, Grand Bahama, Wellington Thomas Forbes, I want to let him know I love him, and I will call him on Father's Day like I normally try to, and wish him happy Father's Day. We couldn't be in here without our Father, but give thanks and praise to the Almighty up above, God. That's the real, real Father, you know. That's the one who don't go against us. You know, these humans, you know, sometimes we go against our children, our fathers go against us, our mothers go against us, but God is always there for us. He allows his son to be here for us and to die for us. So I sometimes say thank God for Jesus, you know.
Yes.
I really thank God for him being there and allowing us to be here. Because I don't think he even had to let it go that far away. Jesus come and die for us, and we still here. So if we only set, I think he said, God set the example for us fathers to carry on. If we do it the way his word, what his word say, then we consider ourselves great fathers. But until then, still, in spite of it all, happy Father's Day, Father. Keep up the good work.
Yes. Okay. Good job, Papa. All right, Carmen, we can take the break.
This whole neighborhood. And now that you go, you know the sun don't shine from the city hall to the county line. And that's why I said ain't no love in the heart of the city. Ain't no love in the heart of town. Ain't no love, and it sure is a pity. Ain't no love, 'cause you ain't around.
The sport of sailing has been a part of these islands from the very beginning. From the first settlers to the Cayenne Indians, to Columbus, to the colonizers, to the African slaves that came here, sailing has been in our DNA. Our first days of Olympic glory came from sailing, and the culture of regattas have been a big part of being Bahamian. The Ministry of Agriculture and Marine Resources presents a five-part series, The Story of Sailing, 8 p.m. Thursdays on the ZNS Network.
In view of the global shortage of medical masks, the World Health Organization recommends that medical masks be prioritized for health workers, people who are sick, and their caregivers at home. In consideration of this, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends the use of cloth face masks by the public to slow the spread of COVID-19. In consultation with the Ministry of Health, the Prime Minister of the Bahamas has requested that Bahamians wear cloth face masks outside their homes. Such masks can be utilized in places such as grocery stores and pharmacies. These masks can function to reduce the transfer of respiratory droplets by the wearer. While cloth masks offer some protection, you are more protected if you follow the recommended preventative measures in addition to wearing the cloth mask. These measures include staying at home, practicing physical distancing at least 6 feet apart from others, washing your hands often for at least 20 seconds, and not touching your face. Our healthcare providers need personal protective equipment while caring for patients. It is important to allow them to have the resources they need to function properly. If the public use cloth face masks, this reduces the chance of having a shortage of medical masks for the healthcare workers. Masks should be used safely and properly. Let us protect ourselves and each other.
This message brought to you by Bahamas Ministry of Health in conjunction with Guardian Radio.
Good evening. At least you say good night. And welcome back to Inside Inner City that premieres on Guardian Radio every 6:30 to 8 p.m. Telephone number is 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. You can text us at 42GR96. I got a quick message here. I was supposed to read it a little earlier. Hi, Brian. I'm Simonette. And if you're And with your lead, you can reach me at SoSo. Father God says to reach out to our brother, Adrian Francis. Francis is being used to God to feed some of our people physically and spiritually. And that's exactly, we have to feed our people physically and spiritually. And as I has a heart to do so, you know, and says he needs some help. Paul, the blind one, when you said that if Jesus Christ played an important role in my life, I want to say this. Yes, Jesus Christ played a very important role in my life. I know that the Creator, God Himself, protected me because all of those times getting shot at from different guys around the country who were top gangsters. You know something? When my friend Keenan Roberts got shot on the side of me, you know, the guy was shooting at me and he got killed. When my friend Terry Marshall got shot on the side of me, he didn't die, but Keenan Roberts died. He got a shot on the side of me. You know, they were shooting at me. When my friend Mario Seymour got shot in his back, the guys were shooting at me. When my friend JP from Freeport got shot in his leg, the guys were shooting at me. You know something? I can let the caller come in right now. Guess what I realized? When I sit down and look at myself, I knew very well that I got shot. But I know that God put a guiding angel there. And that bullet passed through me, but then it dropped my friend. You know how much my friends got shot just hanging over me? I can name over 15, 20 guys who got shot just hanging over me, just hanging around me, okay? So yes, Jesus played an important role in my life because I saw him myself. Because in one of those instances, I was at gunpoint, and my cousin Tyen had a .38 pistol on me. And here's how I know God is real and Jesus is real. That's why I ain't on time for no atheists coming talking no foolishness around me. This is my experience. My cousin had a loaded .38 pistol, just the same gun we took from a guy who tried to shoot me 1 week prior. He took this .38 pistol because there was a dispute. And he had a quarrel with one of my friends. And I parted the fight. And when I parted the fight, he grabbed the gun from his nephew. Julian is now deceased. And he took aim at me with his .38 pistol. And he was mad because we was family and I did not get involved in being like trying to gang the guy. And if my cousin twin them are listening, they know this is story. He tried to shoot me 3 times in my stomach with a .38 pistol. And here how I know God is real. He clicked the gun 3 times to my stomach. The gun did not went off. The minute he walked off, and I told him, when I see you, it could be me and you. You didn't pull this gun on me. When this guy walked off, the street was full of people. I'm not the only witness. There were 100 or more people who witnessed this. When he walked off, he pressed the trigger, and the gun went off, boom, boom, twice. That just one instance. And I knew that there was a God and there's a Jesus. That's why there's no one in this world could tell me that God doesn't exist. And Jesus doesn't exist. I'm not talking about the white Jesus on the church's wall or in the books. I'm talking about the Jesus that is in the Roman in Rome that shows a black Jesus on the wall. Not a white one in the church. In the place, I'm going to the foundation. They have a black Jesus in Rome, in the Vatican City. I'm talking about that black Jesus who had locks. That's the one I praise. Not the white one who was an imitation. Okay? So I know. Go ahead, caller. Sorry for taking so long, caller. Go ahead, caller.
I'm sorry for that. Happy Saturday to you. Man, look at this show so real. First time caller, I like this. You continue here.
Yes,
and be encouraged, man. You know what I mean?
Thank you very much, sir.
Sometimes people need to hear people that come from us, you know, come from over the hill. You know what I mean?
Yes, sir.
I am encouraged, man. Yeah, the only thing is, I just hope that you can allow a few more, other people to call in and stuff. You know what I mean? But you've been encouraged. I appreciate you much. You know what I mean?
Thank you.
And you be safe, man. You and your family, and to all the brothers out there that have children, and five other people's children. Happy Father's Day to everybody, to all of them. You know.
Yes.
All right. Take your mind.
Thank you very much, and to all the callers, you guys did a wonderful job. And if you want to call in and comment on the topic, you can. And I just like to say that I know there's a Jesus, okay? I know there's a God. And as I took a look at myself, I said, you're better than that. So if I'm so serious on the streets as being a gangster, what if I turn my, use that same nerve, not scared of nobody, you know? What if I use that and say, let me see how I could do some positive stuff to make change? And that's what I did. And that's why we're seeing a lot of changes in the country. Yes. Yeah. So, Papa, yes, I truly believe in Jesus. I truly believe in the Almighty. But I'm going to say this again. I don't believe in the Jesus pictures they have up in the church, okay, with the white Jesus and the white long hair, okay? That is not him. That's imitation. You know, and that's why there's so much people disbelieving that Jesus existed, because they fall for the trick. You know, the Hittites switch it around, and they want us to believe that, you know, Jesus was a white man. The late Billy Graham told you that Jesus was a black man. But if you look on our churches in the country, see, all this is a part of it, you know. Y'all might don't believe this, you know. All these false island stuff, you know. When we're hearing the truth, Billy Graham is telling you Jesus was a black man. But you go to our churches, you see a white man and a white symbol there. But we're all black here in the country. So what are we doing? So all this is a part of our problem we face. You might not see it, just spiritual, you know? I just want to say that, you know. But I believe in Jesus Christ. I believe in God. Yes. Okay, we have a few more minutes, so let's try and make the show a little interesting. I just want to say, you know, switch the topic. We see a lot of members of Parliament, Haltrin Moultrie, Miss Roll. We saw Michael Pang. We saw Priceful Forbes. We saw Mark Humes, and etc. Have the distaste in their mouth where they feel that they didn't get renominated for to be a part of the next general election coming up. And I just want to say this real quick. I think there are some good MPs in both parties. I can name a few. Like, for instance, Honorable Shenandoah Cartwright, I think he is a good minister. I think the Honorable Desmond Bannister is a good minister. I think on the progressive liberal side, I would say Priceful Forbes, Ms. Glenn Adam Martin, outstanding politicians, you know, they're very good politicians. We are seeing where some party members are disgruntled because they did not get nominated. They were axed. Mark Jones feel like he's disrespected in the House of Parliament. But when you join the party, you got to understand something. Hey, the Prime Minister of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, the Honorable Hubert Minnis, he knows that when you vote for the Free National Movement, you're voting for him. You're not voting for Mark Humes. You're not voting for Jeff Lloyd. You're not voting for Marvin Dames, okay? They are just candidates put in place, and all their job is to do is to get votes to make prime minister of the country. So that means you guys are dispensable, okay? If you don't have the top seven positions, that number one man is the prime minister, number two man is the deputy prime minister, number three man, I think, is the minister of education or national security or et cetera. And then it goes like that, the ministry of work, number five. If you don't hold these seven positions in government, you only a backbencher. So many persons are saying, many of these persons you see speaking out, I can't say it's Frederick Michael Pang, I can't say it's Juan Miller, but many persons are saying these persons are disgruntled because they were backbenchers, they didn't have a cabinet position, and they felt that they were deserving of more, what they say, more respect from the prime minister. Okay, Haltrin Moultrie was with the government. He was the old speaker. He was lamblashing the opposition during the 2-3 years. Then him and the prime minister seems to fall out. We could pick between the line. He got mad. He asked for certain things. He didn't get it. And then he decided to speak out. Now he's speaking out for justice for the Bahamian people, speaking out on matters he's supposed to be speaking out from the first year when he became speaker of the House. Then we didn't, to my knowledge, he didn't get what he wanted. Minister turning him to the curve, and that was it for him. And so he's using his platform as a speaker of the House to, I guess, messing us up. Okay? Then we have Miss Rose saying that, you know, she could feel that she could repeat as being the member of parliament for the constituency that she represents. She looked directly, and you could see she was referring it to the prime minister. Then we have Mark Humes, who I feel like he felt it was disrespected because the next candidate was mentioned, and the prime minister stated that he would be the new MP for that constituency. Mark Humes is a sitting MP. So he himself, you know, felt disrespected. But listen, all y'all are well paid. Y'all don't have nothing to worry about. Ms. Rose stating that who would put a drone to a house that is in being built and paying mortgage? Who would do such a thing? The opposition would do such a thing. The opposition would do such a thing. Yes, that's the political stance. So, like I said, many persons are disgruntled and they felt that they've been disrespected. But I guess you guys were clapping when you became members of parliament when you all won the government. Boys of a feather flock together. Like I say, to the prime minister, I just want to say something to you, and I want you to notice. You think all those persons around you, Mr. Prime Minister, are your friend? Or they love you? Or the party supporters love you? Some of them only with you suck because you have something that you could give to them. And that's incentive, contract here, might give them some land here, some special privilege here. Okay? They're not your friends. And you know this. So that's why you rule with iron hand, because you understand politics. You know that those members of parliament, eh, who I elected, you know, and you learn the governance of the country, and you know they are disposable. You know that they can be replaced because there are new candidates who are always offering themselves up in the Commonwealth of the Bahamas to replace those who didn't do a good job or who followed with menace. So the prime minister understands that this country is a corporation. I think the members of parliament, and I think the general public needs to understand that the Bahamas is a corporation, okay? With the prime minister, it's the executive, okay? And this is a job, okay? So all y'all sitting members of parliament, it's a job once you get appointed that position by the prime minister. Once you get elected, you serve your constituency. And if you want to cap it in the position, that is up to the prime minister. So many people are saying these persons who are speaking out, right? They say they're disgruntled because they didn't get a cabinet position and didn't get what they want. So they're mad. Menes on that hand, he understands the party structure. He understands his power as the prime minister and leader of the party. He is enforcing it. And he, like he said, he is not concerned about no complaints that those members of parliament are saying to the media or to the general public. You know why? Because the prime minister knows he is the competent authority. You guys, Ms. Roll, Michael Bang, and etc., them, y'all are just disposable who can be replaced, just like a disposable cup. That's all it is. That's all it is. Demand respect. You minister can show you any respect. Minister, the prime minister. Why should he show you respect? Huh? Now, if he were a passionate man or a man who cares for his fellow colleagues, like how Mr. Christie was with his party. But on that hand, Minister is leading with an iron hand. So I feel sorry for those, you know. I feel sorry for Priceville Forbes and his follow with the Progressive Liberal Party. I think he's an outstanding minister. I heard him in Parliament, you know, he's getting rid of Juan McGartney, and Juan was putting on Priceville and saying, why are you crying, Mark Humes, why are you crying? And it's a job and et cetera. You know, I'd say it's a job for some of the parliamentary, but when you spend so much time down in Andres, you create a connection with the residents and you really want to make that change. So I think that when Faisal Forbes was crying, I think he really meant it. I think he really wanted to do more. But the powers to be, like he said, didn't support him. And they was looking elsewhere. Same thing in the Free National Movement. And we must remember everyone has their people. And even sometime when you're close to the prime minister, like Peter Tonquist, you see what happened to him. He was the prime minister right-hand man. I think he was holding the second highest position as the number two man, because I think it's the prime minister, the number one position. Then it's the deputy prime minister. Like I said, I can't remember if it's the minister of national security third or the minister of education or the minister of work. But anyway, there were seven positions, a cabinet position. I think it goes to nine cabinet positions or more. And you know, wow, it's crazy, you know. So all I can say is just try to be a good member, go in your community, do some things that could help change the lives of your community, help the community support you. Because I hear a lot of these MPs today speaking for their constituency, but I never saw one person standing in the back of them supporting them. Even when I hear my good friend Juan Miller, and he talk about he's speaking for the people of his community. I think sometimes when you switch over from one party to the next, I don't think you never talk to your constituency members. I think you use that as a way for you to jump ship. You do that off your own, because I don't think the council members who are in your office that you run, that is a part of the party and a part of your team, I don't think they could switch from Free National Movement to PLP. I think it's just certain member of parliament who represent the area, he decides that, you know, things ain't looking great and it's time for him to leave that particular party and make himself available to a next party. And that's what we saw. So in these cases, like I say, many persons used to behaving people as to say why they're switching ship from one party to the next. Sometimes these people never talk to no constituents, but it's their right, because they understand they have the right to do that. They understand that they're not a sitting cabinet minister, they are backbenchers, and they have an opportunity to switch side if the grass is greener or seems to be greener. Yeah, so most of them people are saying are disgruntled at the prime minister, and that's why the prime minister is doing what he's doing, you know. So I feel it, you know, and I heard Michael Pintard, you know, he said he looked and he saw his colleague, and he feel that some of these parliamentarians who are getting outset could be a weakness and break down the progress of the country and party, because some of these people can contribute greatly to the development of the country. But how they're being sidetracked and getting fired, you know, it makes it more complicated to find persons to fill those positions. Like the Deputy Prime Minister getting fired, Peter Tonquist, Anisha Roll, et cetera. Sitting Member of Parliament, Juan Miller, you know, Minnesota also fired him, took away his permanent secretary position, et cetera. Travis Robertson got demoted, but he got his permanent secretary drawback at the Ministry of Tourism. So the Prime Minister understand the dynamics of politics. He understand that those members of Parliament who are running, whether they are 38 or 39, a vote for any one of those who are on the ticket is a vote for the Prime Minister, and he understands that. So don't care how disgruntled Mark Humes is, and Anisha Roll, and et cetera, they have to accept the fact, and that's the end of story. Simple as that. And that's the end of story. You know, in some cases, people sit there and do nothing in their respective community. I was listening to Juan. And Juan, you need to stop, man. Juan, he's beginning to bother. Juan say, what you done in that community? If I was menace, I would do the same thing too. Have you contributed to the development of your community? And those are some of the questions needs to be asked. And there is probably one of the reasons that the Prime Minister decided to cancel their position that they held under the government. So again, I hope you enjoyed the show. Our producer is Kermit. He does a wonderful job. And like I say, there are a lot of places in our country who have mental issues in the country. And we need to look and enhance our police force where we could have negotiators, persons who could step in when persons have cutlass or a firearm. And we could have someone negotiator come in and try to make them stand on, you know, because there are a lot of persons who have a lot of stress going on in their life. And I would like to say to all the guys on the streets who are harming people, please take a look at our country. Everyone in this country right now is losing a loved one to violent crime. And that even includes you who are hurting an ex-human being in the Convent of the Bahamas. One day, what you did to somebody will come back to haunt you. Try and make yourself a better young man, a better woman, so that you can have a long, illustrious life, you know, and a prosperous life. There's more to life than the negativity. You know, Papa stated that. What can we say to the young people to make them change their minds? For me, what made me change my mind is I said to myself, one day I'd like to get married. One day I'd like to be able to go on a car loan and buy a brand new car. One day I want to be able to travel the world and go anywhere. One day I want to be able to help my aunt who doesn't have a house, who's paying rent. I'll be able, like the sister, to get a house. These are the kind of things you got to be thinking about, okay? So I hope you enjoyed the show. I want to say to all the callers who call in, I want to say thank you very much for the warm words and encouragement. And like I said, everything I do in this country today is for the purpose to try and do some of the stuff that I was involved with and try to make the next generation of the country, you know, with better education, try to reduce poverty, teach them about business management, and the most important thing, teach them about the family value. And why it's so important that as a young man, you got to look to have a wife. As a young woman, you got to look to have a husband. And then the next step is to have children and also to be able to have a future for your children, you know. And that's what I'm doing with the best resources I get. Every program I have dedicated to trying to find ways and how I could help the next generation to make the right choices in the country. Without further ado, you enjoy yourself and see you next week on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM.